We are spending less on things that are getting cheaper.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. In February, then in March, Americans spent more money than the month before. But today there's news that consumer spending dropped a 10% in April, read by some as a sign of a tepid economy. On Fridays, we check in with Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial. Hello, Chris.
Good morning, David.
So you have an alternate reading of this drop today in consumer spending.
Well, that's right, because at the same time there was a drop in consumer spending, there was also a drop in consumer inflation. And what that meant is that even though we spent a little less, we actually got a little more in exchange. It's not strong growth, but there's actually at least a little bit of growth in consumption.
So if you think about it, if you bought more gasoline, spent more for gasoline last month, but the gas got cheaper, that's not like you're pulling back your spending.
Well, that's exactly right. And in fact, it was a big drop in gas prices, which almost never happens in April, that was responsible for most of the decline in inflation. And it meant that we all had a little money left over to spend on other things.
And did you hear, Chris, a new phrase in financial markets and financial media? Ready?
The tapering.
The tapering of what, Chris?
Well, yeah, this is the tapering of quantitative easing. The Fed has promised that this time they're going to ease away from their bond buying program rather than stopping it abruptly. The whole point was to try and make us in the financial markets a little more at ease with the process than we were the first couple of times they did QE. But in fact, what's happening is we've got a near panic in the markets, a huge rise in rates this week, on a fear that the tapering might be coming soon.
Economist Chris Lowe, FTN Financial, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Stones are set to play a live show in Chicago tonight as the summer big concert season shifts into higher gear. This used to be the time of year when artists went on the road to help boost their record sales, but things are changing, as Shannon Mullen reports.
For a lot of musicians now, putting out an album is an excuse to take the stage.
Today, they tour to pay their mortgages.
Gary Bongiovanni is editor of the touring industry trade magazine Polestar. He says artists used to be able to record, sit back, and collect royalties, but as that revenue dried up, they've turned to touring for more of their income.
And at the same time, the price of attending concerts has escalated dramatically, so the cash flows in the live business are much greater than they used to be.
How much of an artist's bottom line comes from concerts depends on the artist. John Kellogg teaches music business management at Berklee College of Music. He says Madonna makes more than 90% of her total revenue on tour.
Now, if you have another artist like a Justin Bieber, who's younger, who is selling records, selling a lot of merchandise, touring income is only going to make up about 60%.
And summer offers the most concert venues, from county fairs to amphitheaters, plus fans with more time on their hands. I'm Shannon Mullen for Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
Folks are gathering now in San Rafael, California, hoping to spread a time-tested financial idea from the Great American Prairie. For 94 years, the state of North Dakota has run a public bank. It's like a mini Federal Reserve that subsidizes loans based on local priorities. This weekend's public banking conference is a grassroots effort to rethink the global banking system. Mark Armstrong is executive director of a nonprofit called the Public Banking Institute. Mr. Armstrong, good morning.
Good morning, David.
Now, you've said something very interesting before. It's about making credit decisions locally. If you're in Montana or Maine or Mississippi, I guess the question is, why are credit decisions being made in faraway New York or Frankfurt, Germany?
Well, what happens is when the state treasurer or any sort of public finance official places the state's deposits into large Wall Street banks, that credit that's created in the bank is then essentially used to further the interest of that bank. And the core value proposition behind a public bank is to put the state tax revenues into a local publicly owned bank and then make those credit decisions locally.
So, for instance, in a given part of the country, if the public policy process decides we want to subsidize entrepreneurship locally, or we would like to give cheaper loans to, for instance, students. That's something a public bank might do very differently from a more standard commercial bank.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what they do in North Dakota. They also fund infrastructure. So instead of putting their deposits into a Wall Street bank and then borrowing the money back at a much higher interest rate, they just fund infrastructure themselves. They fund student loans themselves. The average interest rate is 4.6%, which is a lot lower than what students get at other banks throughout the country.
Now, regular private banks might worry about this kind of competition from a public bank. Why should the public sector compete with the private like this?
Well, it's not a competition. There are plenty of examples where the Bank of North Dakota actually collaborates with community banks. In their annual report that just came out a month ago, the Lutheran Social Services of North Dakota funded a $10 million deal. They needed $10 million in order to retrofit a hospital. And so in that case, that money would have had to come from an out-of-state Wall Street bank. In this case, Bank of North Dakota partnered with Unison Bank of Jamestown and made sure the deal happened, and then the money stayed locally. And so they used their credit to further the public interest in that example.
Well, Mark Armstrong, Executive Director of the Public Banking Institute, thank you very much.
Thanks, David.
Meanwhile, in the land of private financial services, the utility of listing SPY on the resume. There's news that HSBC is bringing to its board the former head of MI5, Britain's domestic spy agency, that after paying nearly $2 billion following money laundering accusations in the U.S., and you heard that former CIA chief David Petraeus just got a nice spot with KKR, the big private equity firm. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.